And speaking of faces, one of the things that drew you into Lightnin' Hopkins, the record, was his face. And what drew you into not only the record, but blues and as a whole?
Well, again, it went back to the idea that obviously Africanist people were able to create such a magic music. You know, I never thought about this. And the other thing was the wrinkled face. I mean, my mother always made me look at old people with, not with disgust, to use a very strong word, quite the opposite, with interest. She always said, these are the lines of life. If you know how to read wrinkles, you got a storybook. So, you know, all these voices that you grow up with that might be irrelevant when you get around 20, they come back to you. And they explain certain things, whether correctly or not, I don't know.
In order to get closer to the blues, Leniger moved to the United States and then moved back to Switzerland, where he played alone for several years.
So, in order to get closer to the blues, you moved to America and stayed here for a while before returning back to Switzerland. And when you got back to Switzerland, you played music by yourself. Why by yourself, not with other people?
I was too embarrassed to play music. I got kicked out of every music class in school because I couldn't hold a note. I couldn't read sheet music. You know, it was a language I did not speak. And to me, the blues was sort of like an introverted voice. It was about a world that is hidden. It's the interior world. So to me, it was a given that you play the blues alone. That was sort of the beginning. So it fed two things. It confirmed that I had all the right to be embarrassed about playing music. And at the same time, I kind of enjoyed what I heard, what I did. And so you're kind of left alone in your own space where you have to be your own judge. And, you know, this is the hardest thing there is, to judge your own creativity or to judge whatever you have to say.
So how long did the period when you were playing by yourself last?
Well, until I met another guy who had done the same thing. He was, you know, on his own, and I was really surprised that he also played the blues. Now, he listened to different styles of music. And so we both met, and it got me a chance to play harmonica more. You know, playing the harmonica by yourself is only so much fun, right? So he played guitar, and he did the singing, which I thought was the hardest thing to do anyway, and I just could hide behind my harmonica.
So you said you were initially embarrassed to play in front of others, but once you moved back to America and you started playing with Jameson Thomas and Anita Baker, you toured around. What happened, what changed that made you want to play in front of other people?
Well, I was always aware that these festivals or these gigs, as you call them, you know, that we got, I didn't get. They did. So Etta Baker from Morganton, North Carolina, and Jameson Thomas from Leland, Mississippi, those were the attractions. Those were the cultural icons. And so I could hide, again, I could hide behind them, just like I was able to hide behind my buddy's voice and guitar in Switzerland. And, you know, playing with them basically meant you carry their amplifiers, you make sure they got the strings on the guitar right, you get them coffee or tea or lemons, whatever they needed. Sometimes needed cigarettes and fried chicken. You know, so that was what I did. That you played was understood. So there was never a criticism about me playing music, because my job was to get them to the gig and back.
But eventually you did start playing in front of audiences. Like now you play in front of people pretty regularly, right?
Right. It's just, you know, every so often in life you get to an intersection and things change, just like we had that flood last week. You know, we only know what changed in our lives once we get past it. And so when I left Switzerland, I left behind my buddy playing music. Son Thomas, when he died, again, you're on your own. When Etta Baker died, you're on your own. And every time you're on your own, you are sort of deciding, should I go on or not? And you kind of review, why are you in it to start with? And every time I did this, you know, there were also people that said, well, but you got something to say, and in order to say it, you got to have an audience. So you kind of get encouragement along the way, and that's what happened to me.
And you said that with Jameson Thomas you immediately felt at home. What was it about him that made you feel that way, as opposed to Etta Baker?
In Son Thomas's case, his life the way he looked, the way he played, it all confirmed Lightning Hopkins. Okay, now, you know, now you're looking at the face with the wrinkles. And if you've ever seen a picture of Son Thomas's face, it's full of wrinkles and, you know, a story in there. His style of playing was very much in line with Lightning Hopkins' style, so that was easy. Etta Baker was much more difficult because she used her thumb in a different way, you know, regional differences. But that was it with Son Thomas. It was just everything came together when I saw him. All the assumptions that I had in my head, all the dreams I had, and all the nightmares as well.
And so those two were some of your teachers for the Blues, but now you're a teacher. And last time we spoke, you said that this was one of the first times this year that you really connected with your students as far as writing. What happened?
I just decided I'm done writing about what people can read in books. You know, and as I have never written a book, I never felt the need to do this. For some reason this year, I just, maybe it's part of my age, with 66, you know, I don't need to hide anymore behind what others have written. I've seen things in my life that is in no book, and I'm always thinking a young person might want authenticity. I mean, that's what the sense I get from my young student. They want to be authentic, you know, and we did the same when we were around 20. So the only thing I can offer authentic about me is my life, and so that's the decision I made this year, and I hope it's going to work out.
You also said that you don't think sometimes that all of your students are either happy with school or life. What makes you think that?
We talk about it. You know, I listen to what they have to say. Of course, they gripe about homework and teachers they cannot understand. So that's not an unusual gripe. But the other thing that I'm sensing is it's embedded in this American dream, end quote. And I think that dream for many students is turning to a nightmare. Because on one side, they have expectations they think they have to meet, and those expectations, I think they get to them through their teachers, through their parents, preachers, whatever there is, the environment. But they have a hard time seeing how they can live up to those expectations, you know, how to get that house and the dog. And the, I mean, in all the years that I've been teaching here at USC, that American dream has not changed. The only thing that has changed is that they would want to wait a little bit longer until they get married. That's all. But the rest is identical. And I think there's an increasing discomfort about that dream because they sense that they might never get there, and they chase happiness. Every American chases happiness. It's probably the only country I know that chases happiness as if it was a goal.
Well, one of the ways that you sort of, your classes differ from others is that instead of a textbook or PowerPoint, you have a harmonica. Mm-hmm. Why use something like a harmonica instead of a more traditional either instrument like a guitar or a textbook?
The harmonica is cheap, okay? For example, this year I got a good deal on harmonicas. They're not going to pay more than $20 for all their course materials. So that's an asset. The other thing is this. The harmonica is an instrument that is directly linked to my breathing. If my breathing is shallow because I'm under stress, harmonica will sound terrible. If I'm relaxed, that instrument changes. So I'm using the way you hear yourself on the harmonica and link it back to you. Like, what is it that's bothering you? So write the story. So I connect the discovery of what is within you with your own writing. That's what I can offer. And so you learn a lot about your students. And I don't see why they should spend all that money on stuff that they might not even be interested in. But I think every student is interested in how he or she feels going through school.
And so that's what you want students to learn from taking your class. But what else do you want them to learn as far as from themselves or just from the music or blues as a whole?
Well, it's the discovery that everybody has a bad day once in a while. And that a bad day is not the same as blues. There's a difference. You know, you can have a bad hair day, you can have a bad test day, whatever that is, but that's not blues. Blues is on a deeper level where your hopes are in question all of a sudden, where maybe the, one of your deepest wishes or wants is in question for some reason, right? It's in trouble. Now you're looking at a blues issue, something that cannot be fixed because it's already over, something you've got to live with. And the other thing is, how much is yourself involved in your own problem? You know, it's easy to point always at somebody else. But I want students to begin to understand, in blues, you're just as much part of the issue as the other guy.
And you had previously said that if you had a musical career, you wouldn't be teaching because you couldn't do both at the same time. Why couldn't you do both?
When you play music or create music, you have to be free of explanation. And if you teach, you have to explain. I have not been able to kind of marry those two things easily. That's why, you know, one part of the year, that's what I do, I teach. And the other part, I try to play, at least what is left of it. Sometimes teaching is easier because you run out of creative ideas. Sometimes performing is easier because you don't have to build on your own explanation the next time. So, yeah, I like these both of these worlds, you know, that you can interchange. And I think most people are like this. You have a moment where you create an idea, but how to translate this into doing is a different story. So, yeah, that's about as best as I can explain that.
And just for my final question, going back to Lightnin Hopkins, you initially said that when you first heard him, you thought you understood what he was saying, but you realized you didn't. Are there any ways you feel closer now to understanding what he was saying all those years ago?
No. And that, to me, is always the magic, that you're chasing something. Either you keep it yourself in front of you because you don't want the answer, and then you would be in jazz, right? In jazz, you play around the answer over and over because that's the creative part. So you avoid the answer. So that could be the reason. The other thing is this. I understand his words now. I know what a rat is, you know, that you put on your head, a hairpiece. So that has been solved. I think I know the difference between mama and woman now and baby. You know, these are kind of linguistic differences. But in terms of what it meant to the culture to have some poet like Lightnin Hopkins and telling stories that they can laugh about, I will never understand that, because that is still the old division, is the cultural, being foreign in that culture. And it's okay. I enjoy that. Keeps me something to do, you know.